Welcome to the fuck house. We saw Jade, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater, catch you there, you wonder, how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? I am Tall John Shear. I hope that intro gives Jason and June enough confidence in me that we're ready to handle this virtual live record. This is a great movie that we're going to talk about. And normally I will break down the film in my clever little way of telling you what it's about. But I'm going to do something I've never done before and let an Amazon reviewer break down the film for you. This is from Juscelino Liberato D'Aquino. And it was from April 30th, 2001. And he describes the film like this. It's a nice movie. If you like Basic Instinct or Bound, Eyes Wide Shut, which are better, you might like this one. I love it. Basically, the plot is there are millionaires taking part in orgies and having sex like most of us would like but are afraid of. And then there's someone blackmailing them and a mysterious, dishy lady called Jade who is not afraid of exploring sex, who may or not be involved in the murder / blackmail cases. There's great car chases, one of the best that I've ever seen, and the story is very interesting. But I warn you, if you get easily shocked or offended, you will hate it. But if you're like me and you love to watch movies for fun, you'll like it a lot. It's also still a lot better than any porn movie because those bore you after 5 minutes and this one will not. It's not a porno. Five star review. And that is the that gives you a taste of what Jade is. I feel like that that is one of the best breakdowns of the film. Let's get into talking about it right away with one of my co-hosts, Mr. Jason Manzoukas. How are you, Jason?
Wow. Starting with starting with second opinions is bold. Total format shift. I mean, this is some wild stuff. This was watching this because I remember when this movie came out. This was like this was that era of erotic thrillers.
Yes.
This was, again, Joe Estrohaus, who wrote Basic Instinct. You've got William Friedkin directing, like it came from like good auspices. And then even is this the movie that David Caruso leaves NYPD Blue to is it this movie
yes,
he goes to?
Yes, it is this movie and another movie called Kiss of Death, two movies back-to-back in 1 year.
Okay.
I want to break in all that because David Caruso
there's so much that I barely remembered this movie until I put it on and I was like, I remember all of this movie.
Wow.
And I was like, this, and watching it, it felt like I, in my head, had told more of a story of what I thought this movie was than the movie does. I feel like this movie is, I feel like they shot the outline. Like, I don't feel like they wrote a full script. I feel like they shot the treatment of the movie. It's so just broad strokes.
We will get into it. I don't even want to delay, and I want to bring in my other co-host, a person who said to me 15 minutes into this movie, this is my favorite movie ever. Please welcome Miss June Diane Raphael. How are you, June?
I'm doing well. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for asking.
I did love this movie, and I loved every second of it. And, you know, Paul and I were talking a little bit about this, Jason. Like, this is, to me, this is that movie that my parents got at Blockbuster where Paul worked, and like I was excited to see.
Not the one where Paul actually worked.
Not the one where Paul actually worked.
Because that would be a huge reveal.
No, oh my gosh, didn't meet this there. Late in the
game. If
we
you were guys were
ships passing
patrons,
in the night.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, I just, as soon as it started, I was like, God, I'm having a muscle memory of sitting with my parents and watching like these adult dramas and thrillers.
Oh, yeah.
That were focused on like wealthy people and sex and power and like having to sit through sex scenes with them. And just like all of it was so familiar. And I don't think I've ever seen this movie, but I've also seen this movie many times.
Yes. Well, it's like, exactly. There's so many movies. There's another movie with like Kim Basinger and Richard Gere that takes place. Like, it's always like a psychologist who's getting mixed up. We talked about a couple of these.
I was just going to say, it's always about like how it's very similar to Madonna and Willem Dafoe as well.
That's right.
Body of evidence. It's always a woman whose sexual empowerment comes also with being like a doctor or a psychiatrist or something else, but that it also has this kind of incredibly potent and power. I forget what Sharon Stone's profession is in Basic Instinct, but all of these Esterhaus movies, Sliver is another one.
Oh, they're we gotta do that.
They're all bananas, and they are all exactly what you're saying, June. Like, the incredibly wealthy, the machinations of the incredibly wealthy sexually, and then complete disregard for life. Eyes Wide Shut was a thing about, I feel like Kubrick took this to a level in Eyes Wide Shut that showed like the true underbelly of it.
Yes.
Without romanticizing it in a way.
Right. Well,
this makes murder sexy, right?
Yes.
Like, it is like part of the thing. And the way this movie ends is so bananas. I want to work towards it, but I will say, like, I took note of one thing that really made me laugh. Like, you know, remember Jersey Shore? It was like Jim Tan Laundry. Like, here it was GCR, Gala Church Racquetball. And I felt like those three scenes back to back was like, what? Okay. This is such a movie for middle-aged parents or adults in the 90s. It's like, you're going to church. You're getting dressed in a tux. You're going to play racquetball. Like, it just hit every little thing that was like, yes, I want to be doing that.
It's also aspirational.
Yes.
It's all aspirational in the sense of like, everybody, there's also like, it also establishes what all of these movies do, which is an incredibly enormous scope, but incredibly small number of overlapping people. So like, this is a movie that takes place in the halls of justice, lawyers, judges, etc., the police department, the governor's office, the district attorney's office. I thought David Caruso was a cop for most of it, and then I was like, he's the DA.
Wait, what?
Yes.
He's
DA.
A cop.
He is a district attorney.
He passed a bar exam at some point?
He is a lawyer. Remember, Chaz Palminteri is like, when you're ready to hang it up, come and be a partner at my law firm.
I did hear that, and I did hear a lot of talk of like the next election and all that, but I didn't believe it.
I wrote in my notes, I was like, wait a minute, is Caruso's cop a lawyer? And then I was like, oh no, he's not a cop, but they're conflating. What they do is, Esterhaus does is he takes all the players from all these disparate elements and he just is always putting them in the same room. So they all know each other. They're all friends.
It's bonkers that David Caruso in this film, he's a DA, he runs investigations like a straight up cop.
He's
in multiple car chases.
Do lawyers show up at crime scenes?
No.
Okay.
I mean, he flashed a badge. When he went into that first murder scene, he pulled out his wallet and goes like, here's that. And he goes, I'm not here.
Which
makes sense because
he's open to being wrong. But
no,
let me,
you're right,
hold on.
Jason. You're right. Like, I mean, I believe that you're right because Donna Murphy.
I don't know.
Donna Murphy.
The plot. Wikipedia. San Francisco assistant district attorney David Corelli Caruso is called to the murder scene, blah, blah, blah.
He's trying to be the DA, and that's what the governor, Richard Crenna, who is great in this role. By the way,
chomp, everybody's chewing the scenery in this movie.
I mean, the MVP to me, and I'm really I think I know his name, is Ken King, who plays Petey Vesco, who is the older, like the Wilford Brimley cop. We have the Ted Lasso cop, who's Michael Bean, who is great.
Michael Bean.
I love Michael Bean. And we have Ken We have Ken, or whatever, Ken King, who is just a joy to watch. Like, yeah. He does not fit the mold.
He looks like he's in a Chicago, he's like a Chicago cop. You know, he looks,
he's so,
you know,
perfect.
Everybody's great. And I cannot stress enough that my profound attraction at the time to Linda Fiorentino.
Oh, come on. You can't
from
even,
the Last Seduction to this, she is so good. She's so sexy and so compelling as the femme fatale, or in this case, what you perceive to be the femme fatale.
Yeah, not but the femme fatale, turns out.
No, but is also crushing it in this
movie.
Well,
listen, I watched this movie with Paul, who felt similarly to the point where I was like, I was having the same flashbacks of watching these sex scenes with my parents, watching them with him, because it was, it was like, actually, I was like uncomfortable. And then at one point,
come on. I was
he
joking.
Fell asleep and he fell asleep and then he woke up. And he's like, there's not enough sex in this movie. And I was like, didn't you just see that sex scene where, like, she's,
I had to rewind it.
Literally, yeah, a person we've never seen before is going down on her and she's standing up. And
yeah.
Like, it was crazy. I'm like, did you not just see that? And he was like, oh, I fell asleep. He was so mad.
I have an update, guys. I have an update. I just opened that Wikipedia to read that line to you, and I noticed there is a director's cut of this movie that is NC-17.
Oh, boy.
Yes. So
why didn't we watch that cut?
Well, it's unavailable. That cut is unavailable because it actually did worse than the regular DVD cut. So there was a time, and I remember this again, and we have talked about this in previous Laserdisc conversations, where there was a big market for like NC-17 cuts, like The Getaway with Kim Basinger and Alec Baldwin. Like, you almost, you saw Pina
Henry
in there.
And June.
Henry, like, you, people were like, but they were taking our movies and making them hotter, like, or, you know, sexier. And it was on VHS. And this is a movie where, I guess, from what I read, it was really the sex tape is where there's 10 minutes of more sex footage. And people also say it has an alternate ending. And people also say that it makes the plot make sense. All these things are up in the air, because I want to just maybe start off with the thing that's the most disturbing to me about all of this, which is one of the small details that gets lost in the sea of shit. This movie was produced by Robert Evans.
Oh, yeah.
So Robert Evans, a famous Hollywood producer, Godfather, I believe The Exorcist 2, maybe I'm wrong,
a prolific Paramount producer. The Kid Stays in the Picture is his autobiography and the documentary about him. Like, if you have not seen it, The Kid Stays in the Picture, the documentary, get involved, because he is like a key figure in 1970s filmmaking.
And so one of the rumors I knew about Robert Evans, and I've heard many, was that my friend was working on a script with Robert Evans, and he had a bureau. And on top of the bureau were little lockets filled with women's pubic hair. And when this movie delivers that as one of the first plot points of the film, I was like, oh my, like, there's Robert Evans going, you know what would be interesting is if
hang on, Paul, do you not have one of those?
That made me sick. That honestly made me feel
the fact that they were
sick.
All on just a side table. They were out.
I might have to.
They
mute.
Were
I can't.
Out, they were out for display.
Oh, I feel sick.
It's not like a secret drawer. It's not an anything. It's just they're out at a side table next to like a radio.
They're just sitting there, and there was so much of it. There was
so much.
There was so much.
So many
of it.
Different colors and. Oh,
and there
was
like, it also
horrible.
Could, I mean, I know it was I know it was a different time, but there was a volume in each of those silver boxes, because they're not lockets, Paul. They're boxes. And they're little,
they're
like
pillboxes.
They're little exactly, pillboxes or snuff boxes or something like that. They're each engraved, and they are chock full of pubes. They are like,
stop, please,
it's like
stop
you
it
open
right
it you,
and
it's like a joke, it's like a,
and they're
it's like,
fluffy,
it's like the snakes in a can joke, in that you open it and pubes explode.
I was gonna say it's like opening up.
I genuinely feel sick right
it was
now.
Like
I'm
opening
not kidding. I'm not kidding.
All right. All I want to say is I don't want to make June vomit. So I just want to say one thing and say this.
Ugh.
Why was that introduced when it played no part in the film at all. Like, all they needed to do is DNA test or like, it didn't play a part. I mean, I guess it only plays a part to say that perversion or kink. I don't want to per se.
Yeah, no, this movie, I can't stress enough. I don't know if you guys remember this, how much this movie was represented in its promotion and its reception as like too sexy.
Right.
Like too, it was the movie that people were like, now this has gone too far. The Basic Instincts, the kind of sexual erotic thrillers, they were like, this is, because it was all of this kinky sex, like guys going down on women. Ooh la la. Can you imagine?
Or how about when that one woman just goes up to Chaz Palminteri and just whips out his dick and just starts going to town?
By the way, that's the same woman.
Many movies of this time.
Yeah.
Like, yes. A guy in a suit. Like, I'm still having to like unlearn some things because that's what I watched with my parents over and over. Was like,
June.
I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, you are like Pavlovian condition.
Like, that was my first experience of like what a woman's sexuality was seeing multiple women in movies like this. Just give blowjobs like immediate blowjobs.
How sex works is if a man is in pleated pants and he walks up to you,
crotch to eye level, like you have no choice. You must start sucking his dick immediately. Nothing else can happen but that.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's crazy.
That scene is in every movie of this time.
It really is. But that is, all of those scenes are just like, these men are so powerful or wealthy or whatever that they don't even have to engage in flirting, pleasantries, the foreplay, anything. It is just transactional. They just get to,
yeah.
That's exactly what the Amazon review kind of said, right. that it just happens for them. The kind of sex we all dream about, the kind of sex you don't have to work for, you know?
No, listen, yeah, well, this, now I'm genuinely recovering from that pube discussion because
do you want to hear a clip of it, June?
No, I don't. I will say, I also have a strong stomach. Like, I'm not somebody who feels, I don't have a weak stomach.
I can just and press that, play right now and you can
no,
hear
them. No, that made
discuss.
Me like,
but when,
feel
when
sick.
Company is over, do you think he puts those little boxes away, or
no.
are those like
what
a conversation?
To this?
Are those a conversation? Are those like a conversation? Like, do you feel like if he Marie Kondo'd his apartment, his house, like everything else would go, but the boxes would stay because they bring joy?
What I was going to say to move off of this puke conversation is this movie has something I've never seen. There's a lot that I both had never seen this movie before, and I've seen this movie many times, but there was something that was brand new and I think has never happened in any movie ever that's ever been made in the history of cinema. And that is two redheaded people in a scene together.
Oh yeah, you're talking about the double ginger.
I have never. It was so shocking.
Yeah, that's called a double ginger, and it's considered
two gingers together.
This is, you know, for a long time people thought that you couldn't do it because the people wouldn't watch it, and this movie proved them right.
Well, I mean, normally you're just going to do a man woman scene or a man man scene.
Oh boy,
but this ginger
scene is. By the way, his hair is so ginger. And I've forgotten about it.
Oh, these two are full-blown ginge.
And I want to say this about ginger representation. Like, I actually left this movie thinking like, wow, gingers are underrepresented in film and TV. And
I agree.
Because I was so stunned to see it that it made me, you know, it made me really think about how there's not a lot of gingers out there.
I agree. And I'm not making fun of gingers. It was just an intense thing. And I think what makes it more intense is the way that they dressed David Caruso, which was green on green on green.
Green.
Like green.
They're constantly green turtleneck.
Why was his suit three shades of green? Like green tie, green suit.
It was as if he said when he went in for his wardrobe fitting, he was like, my actor's secret is that I'm a leprechaun, but I just I just want to hint at that.
No one fully looks comfortable in their clothes. I know that it's the 90s and whatever, but Chaz Palminteri, I would be like, has he ever worn a suit? It didn't look like, it didn't feel like the clothes, like it felt like the clothes were rebelling against the people, except for Linda Fiorentino and Angie Everhart. They look fantastic.
You cannot cast Chaz Palminteri in a movie and have anybody believe he's not the bad guy.
Well, you, I mean,
just, Paul, that is not, Paul did not think he was the bad guy, and I called it pretty early on.
What? Oh, come on. No, that's impossible. It is the minute you make that casting decision, you're like, obviously that's the villain.
But he, you know what I felt like he was doing? I felt like, because he just did The Bronx Tale, which this movie comes out the same year he's nominated for that. I felt like he's like, I'm changing it up. I am now a high class lawyer. I'm smooth. I'm sophisticated. Like, because
I'm working with Friedkin. Like, I mean, like, you cannot underestimate at this point, William Friedkin is, you know, still riding out. I mean, not riding high exactly, but he's still one of the, you know, well-regarded directors of his time. You wouldn't know it from, this is the man who did The Car Chase in The French Connection that is widely regarded as that and Bullet are the, which he didn't do, but are like the car chase, the car chases of the modern era.
Yeah.
The car chases in this movie are terrible. Terrible.
The cars are launching at such a rate that it felt like someone is rocket launching them. Like, yes. Like they're flying over the hill.
And the Chinatown sequence was comedy. It was hilarious. God. I was so much LOLing.
So much disregard for human life in the car chase. So many more people died during the car chases than died because of the sex scandal.
Oh, absolutely.
That car chase. But why would you ever drive into a full-on parade and keep on driving? It seemed as if David Caruso, if he got out of his car, he would make more headway than he did. And the car chase, it shot so weird that the POV sometimes is the hood of the car, and you saw it like break a vase and like knock over like a Buddha statue. It's like, what the fuck am I watching?
Didn't we do another movie where Andy Garcia's a lawyer who's also representing his ex-girlfriend or is trying to go against his ex? Didn't we do another one?
He would have been great in that part.
By the way, put Andy Garcia in either of these parts, by the way. I would have taken Andy Garcia in either role, frankly.
I recently rewatched The Godfather 3, and he is actually very, very good in it. They did the
director's cut. Wait, did you watch the new cut?
The new cut, and it's actually it is... For a flawed movie, it's a better version of the flawed movie.
Okay.
I actually think it's more enjoyable.
Okay.
He left NYPD Blue, like Jason alluded to do this film. And he did two films back to back, and coming off the hot, you know, NYPD Blue.
You can't underestimate how enormous NYPD Blue was as a launching pad. And the fact that he then very cockily was like, see you later, turkeys. And then just crashed and burned. Next thing you know, CSI Miami. Yeah.
By the way, do you know that Friedkin wanted Warren Beatty to be David Crowley? Which actually, to me, would lend a level of gravitas to it in a way. Like, I feel like that's kind of like the Willem Dafoe I feel like in a weird way, David Caruso looked a little bit too young to
only person who is correctly cast in this movie is Linda Fiorentino. Of the main cast is Linda Fiorentino.
Oh, wait, but hold on. And is the governor. Incredible. The governor.
Oh, but then the rest of them. Right. I'm saying of the
I
main.
I thought Donna
of the
Murphy
main,
was fantastic.
Sure, and I thought Michael Biehn was great. Right,
so we're just saying of the three.
There were great people. I'm simply just saying of the trio of the main cast, Linda Fiorentino, David Caruso, and Chaz Palminteri, I think are miscast.
Yes.
I totally agree. I mean, why did ultimately... So, okay, first of all, let's talk about Linda's character for a second. Mm-hmm. Why is she... her scholarship and area of, like, academics seems to be that she's studying violence in the workplace?
She's studying exactly what... her husband is suffering from?
But she says at that lobby conference that she does that she's
in a place that's like used for an airport in LA. Like that place is, right. I feel like I've shot in that place.
I thought she was introduced as somebody who studies violence in the workplace.
Yes.
I was is rage, violence in the workplace a thing?
Rage. Like, I know in the postal system,
but
yeah,
everywhere?
But that
no, like, for sure. You're absolutely right. And she talks about it as if it is like
it's happening like a here, seminar, there, and everywhere, an epidemic.
Exactly. As if you would give us a corporation like a sexual harassment seminar or a safety in the workplace seminar. She's giving one about people who the frequent occurrence of people flying into blind rages.
And everyone is in a suit. So this is a high profile, like this is like this is like a high level company, and she's getting a private jet to go there. So I didn't know if that was her own private jet or the company sent a private.
Well, that's a good question. But then also, she seems to be an art curator.
Seemingly, yes.
Now, is that just like, oh, I have this job, but I'm also on the board? All because right.
She's on
like
the board of the museum.
Okay.
And that's why she's talking to the guy that was murdered. But that seems to me to be her,
like, are you bringing in collections?
Well, like, is that part of the deal? That she was responsible for, like, curating, like, all the fertility masks and, like, specific pieces.
Oh, my God. We have to talk about the opening of this.
Oh, yeah.
I have so many issues with the lead character who we never meet. And I want to just call out somebody that no one's going to give any credit to, which is the person who did Photoshop in this film. It is the best Photoshop. Jason and I talked about this. It's terrible in Wonder Woman. Here, the Photoshop looks like he is with Reagan. It looks like he is with Nixon. Great Photoshop. Even with the David Caruso Photoshop later on, it's not bad. And for a movie that came out so long ago, not bad at all. So you're going through this house, and it's, I think, pretty atrociously appointed. It very, it has a very Asian theme to it. Like it's like a general Asia, right? I feel like that there's a lot of these cabinets. Like it's things that like my mom would get in our house. We had a lot of these same cabinets that were like Asia influenced, but I don't, you know, but you got them at like Pier One. And you're going up the stairs and you're hearing like this muffled talking. And then the music.
If you have closed captioning on, you can hear what it says, what's being said.
Oh, what were they saying? Wow. Anything worthwhile?
It's all like general, like, what are you doing here? Oh, okay. Get out of here. You know, it's those kind of exclamations. It's not, it doesn't give you pertinent information or anything.
So as you're hearing that muffled thing, the music crescendos so high, like dun dun dun, on this fertility mask, which plays no part in the entire film, nor does it crescendo with the scene. It just keeps on going on. I'm like, what is happening here? Like, who chose a musical choice? Like, you they hit do that crescendo a thing, when you see him dead.
Yeah, they do a thing in this movie which is to create a sense of like things are weird here by incorporating a ton of like the art collection of this man who is the murder victim, that is the catalyst for the movie. His art collection is like rare artifacts and masks from all over the world. So he's like appropriating all of these like tribal masks. And so the walls are decorated with these. I can just feel like I can see Friedkin being like, I want masks everywhere. I want it to feel like everybody's watching, because that's what this movie's about, is people watching people fuck and die, and those are the eyes and the masks are watching. They know what's going on, you know.
But to its point, the masks never play a role. Like I was thinking, we're gonna see a sex scene with those masks on. They're like, who's behind it? We don't know.
Paul, that's just what you wanted. You invented that.
By the way, June asked a question that I fell asleep for, but then I rewatched it last night after she went to bed, and I was like, why was Linda Fiorentino wearing the stocking over her face? Is that
I wrote that down too.
Okay, yeah, I don't understand. Is that a sexual thing?
When I asked you, you immediately said because it's sexy.
No, I was joking because I thought she was breaking into a house and had stocking on her face.
I felt like on the day they were like, I don't know, what if you put some pantyhose over your face? Like, it felt like
maybe
this is something people do during sex.
Yeah,
it was like I don't understand. Like
it was like we want to show something very sexy, but we don't we can't show a lot of the things.
Oh my God. So I loved the, I loved the crime scene walkthrough where all the sex toys and everything are out. And our favorite policeman is like, get a load of this. This is this, the inflatable sex pillow. It looks like an inflatable neck pillow. And he's reading the description.
There's so many instructions on that pillow.
There's so many instructions that he's reading off of the pillow itself. A, number one, I mean, I'm not touching that pillow.
Oh, like,
it's fully inflated. Also, it has just been inflated, which must mean it was just used.
Oh.
So why is he handling it so casually?
And why is dildos and butt plugs on the pillow? I mean, it's literally an advertisement for the pillow on the box.
Deep-seated massage oil. And over here we have a Harmony pillow. This pillow allows deeper penetration by positioning both partners most advantageously. It raises the female hips, facilitating male entry. You can inflate the pillow to varying degrees of hardness or softness while enjoying the thrill of rotary and floating action.
It's not in the box. He's reading it directly.
No, he's reading it off of the pillow itself.
I know, I'm saying, but he is reading what you would put on the box.
Oh,
then yeah. It's like printed on the
box. And I do feel like for that kind of stuff, you want it, like if someone walks in, you want it to look like it could just be a part of your decor.
It also is like, and I wonder if you, June, in your...
It was pretty small.
Yeah, the version of you watching it with your parents and so forth. Like that guy, when they first enter the room, he grabs like a little bottle and he says like, blah, 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 scented massage oil. As if that's the most insane thing you could consider.
Oh,
you know, is like lube or massage oil being used during sex is like perversion.
Guys, they literally are in a room full of veiny dildos and they look at this pillow. That is, and I know I'm saying pillow wrong. That's my own thing. Don't worry about it. I don't need critiques. Long Island.
It's hard for me to have to think about that word. Pillow.
But a pillow. He's holding this thing.
Wait. What are you guys? How are you wrong?
I say pillow.
I say pillow too. It's because we're both from Long Island. That's why.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't notice it.
I know people will correct it.
I say worry wrong.
Okay. What do you say? Say it again, Jason.
I don't know. Worry. I'm worried about it.
Yeah. You say that wrong.
Yeah. I also say hot dog.
First of all, don't ever say that again.
And popcorn.
okay, well, I'm so
that
upset.
Is those are amazing.
Which are also apparently wrong.
All right, so again, just to get back to this scene, because there's so much unpack in this house, this pillow, is so small and it seems so like honestly not even that sexual. It's like, oh, so I guess you could put that underneath your back. Like, there's a really funny...
No, Paul, you put it... you don't put it underneath your back.
Oh, wait.
Lay on top of it.
Oh, wait, hold on.
You don't...
You don't bring it on an airplane. It's not a neck pillow.
No. What I'm saying is this. No, wait. I don't want to be misconstrued. I'm saying that you can use it in many different ways. Like you could put it underneath your hips, so your hips are higher, so you could have a different entry point. You could put it.
You put it. He describes it, babe.
Reads the instructions.
I'm just saying, but yes, okay, we're saying the same thing. But I also think that you could also be laying on your back and put it underneath the small of your back and launch your back. Because I think it has multiple purposes. Look,
so you
hold
think
on.
Holy shit.
How would you, it's a V that goes up. Like, how
no, it was, it
back?
Had multiple folds.
Oh
look,
my God.
There was a great bit in a Burn After reading about like those sex pillows that like George Clooney has. It's like these big sex blocks. Like that.
That's the fuck machine.
No, that was like, didn't he have like those big, it almost looked like something you would see at a gymnastics, like place. It's like big cubes and stuff like that.
He builds that thing that you can sit on and when you ride
The
dildo comes out the middle. So it's a fuck machine.
Okay. Well, all right. So anyway, I just thought like,
I guess it's my understanding of it.
I think it is. I thought the width of it was very small. Like it
was very small.
Like,
it looked
for a smaller frame.
It looked I'll be honest. It looked like a travel pillow.
Yes,
you know, it looked like an inflatable travel pillow.
It wasn't like, I guess what I'm saying is it wasn't like ooh, what are they doing? It's like, oh yeah, it's just so she can get fucked in the ass better.
Thing.
Like, I mean,
here's my thing is, me crazy, but if you need to raise someone's pelvis up, use a pillow.
Right.
Well,
like a pillow that's on the bed.
But you don't want to get that stuff on your
pillow.
Why do you
need
get that
to go and
junk on
inflate? It's cheap looking. The inflatable sex pillow
that's,
is cheap looking.
I think
looking.
You're right about that. I think if you were to create something, and listen, I don't know where our merch is at if we want to get in the fuck pillow game.
Get
but
in it.
Holy T-Public, shit. Can you create holy a fuck shit. Pillow? T-Public. T-Public /HTDGM/fuck pillow. That's it. We're putting them out.
I do think it could be. I think it could be great if it were more. If it had more, like weight to it. Like it looks
if it was like a
Tempur-Pedic.
If it was like a Tempur-Pedic material.
Yeah.
So that you felt like it could really take a lot of punishing but give you support.
I'm drawing a picture of this for you now because I believe that. I believe that if. Okay, hold on. Okay.
We gotta see if T-Public or who if we have to go outside of T-Public to manufacture How Did This Get Made branded fuck pillows, we'll do it.
All right.
We just need to figure out what the design is.
I don't know if you can see this. It may not show up. You see this?
Yes.
Okay. This is a t-shirt. This is a t-shirt. Send this to whoever immediately.
Okay.
This is the t-shirt.
I'm confused, though. Which is the pillow?
The pillow and the legs. The mistake you made, Paul. Wait, Paul, stop. Keep that so it can be the t-shirt. Don't alter that drawing.
Okay, I can get it back.
Oh, my God.
But that, like, that just gives you a little bit more of a...
No, this is insane. Because
wait a minute.
Wait a second. Insane.
What is the Paul is Paul is drawing a stick figure couple having sex. Which way is the prone person facing? So this is missionary.
This is missionary, but the hips are higher.
The hips don't.
But why are the legs going straight out? Like the point of that pillow is for it to lift your hips up.
The hips are up because if she was down, her butt would
why
be on
are
the
her
bed.
Legs, but why are her legs flying straight
her
out?
Her legs seem to be, they need to be held aloft.
Yeah, well, he's holding her legs. He's holding her legs right there.
Why? It looks like her legs need like stirrups. Is this an OBGYN appointment? Is she getting a pap smear? What's happening?
I just think that if you put the cube as a triangle underneath the small of your back, you're lifting up.
Here's what I'll say. I agree with you, Paul. I think the pillow can be used.
Thank you.
Either underneath you, facing down.
That's
if you're
I'm
the
saying.
Woman, face down, or face up. It really is just to lift your hips, your pelvic area higher. I think that's it on either side. But your drawing needs to be a t-shirt. I cannot.
Okay.
This might be the first How Did This Get Made t-shirt I buy. Holy shit! The first stick drawing you drew was next level.
Okay, I will just do that, and I
holy
will,
shit!
I can recreate it very simply.
My god!
They didn't even have a head. The guy didn't even have a head.
Okay, but
holy shit!
Here's the thing. If we're gonna make this fuck pillow, then we need. I think it needs to be because the one in the movie had like, didn't it have like a hollow center?
Well, no, yeah, the one in the movie, yes,
this
and it also had
solid.
Like it also had a hinge.
Well,
yeah,
that's
it also,
the thing that
which
George
was
Clooney
strange.
Has in Burn After Reading.
Okay, because this needs to be a solid. Like a dense material.
It's got
to
be Tempur-Pedic, I think. we got to talk to or memory
God.
Foam. This is what we can do. We can partner. I'm sure as a podcast, we have partnerships with one of these dumb memory foam companies. Casper.
By the
Lisa,
way, I'm just showing you. I'm showing you guys.
Put us in touch.
I'm showing you the sex pillow that was in Burn After Reading.
Yeah, that's it. It looks like the same type of thing they. Yeah, that's
just like
about.
A wedge.
That's
that looks
what I was
like
saying,
a workout
like that,
wedge.
Like, yeah, that's what I was saying. That's what I remember it as being, like a wedge.
But now Google, I mean, if there are, the sex pillow from this movie.
Jade.
I love that your Google search was George Clooney sex pillow.
Well, like,
no,
like,
don't do Jade. Or I guess Jade.
Even the movie.
Just Jade. Well, here, sex
like, this
pillow.
Is it. This is it. Like, this one looks like about right. This one looks about like, I mean, look, Jade is not good. We've advanced in technology, but that's
about
the width.
How about Jade movie sex pillow?
Okay, Jade movie sex pillow.
Because it looked like an inflatable.
Oh, I have the clip. I have the clip I can play right here.
I mean, we all remember what it looked like. It looked inflatable. It looked like it had one of those little plastic things that you blow up.
Yeah, it looks like an inflatable like Ames chair or something like that. Like a small version of it. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
By the way, do not Google Jade movie sex pillow.
Yeah, it really is opening up a lot.
Unless you want some very intense results.
I will say this, that in a house where there is so much stuff going on, the fact they point out massage oil, a pretty innocuous pillow, and then a California pizza or Wolfgang Puck pizza, like
that
a frozen
made me
pizza.
Laugh so hard.
Oh, like we gotta play David Caruso just when he realizes what he's in, when he sees the pizza.
Christelle, Beluga, Wolfgang Puck. It's a fuck house.
It's not just a fuck house. He's got a nice little camera over here. And there's another one up here. Low light, high density.
Next door neighbor says he saw a lot of women come over here.
Hey, did you check out these jam and jellies and clitorifics? I was thinking about you.
Honey, if I were you, I'd rip off a few of those butt plugs. They're designed for the perfect asshole.
I mean, that when his realization...
It's also like, this is a movie that really is... It's trying to give you access to like the mega wealthy.
Right.
Right. And the mega wealthy are so wealthy that when they go to have their affairs, they have a fuck house on the coast that in the bedroom, you know how opulent they are? In the bedroom is a mini fridge, ? Full of champagne, caviar, and Wolfgang Puck frozen pizzas.
But you would have to go to the kitchen to make it. You would have to go to the kitchen. Like, it's not, you can't just like caviar, I guess.
Yeah.
But like, you'd have to be like, oh, I keep the sex pizzas in here.
Darling, can I get you some champagne? Perhaps I can go heat up a pizza. It's like, what?
Because that's always the thing that you really want to do.
Maybe some chocolates. Listen,
sometimes
maybe
you do need snacks after, you know.
I have no problem with snacks.
We saw it in that movie with Kevin, with Alec Baldwin, where they're like nakedly eating like Doritos after sex. It was so bizarre, that Addicted to Love movie.
I think if you're going to a fuck house, then you're exerting a lot of energy and a lot of calories, and you might need to sustain yourself. So I actually appreciated that there was a pizza there.
I agree 100%. I just think the pizza could have been in the freezer of the kitchen fridge, not in the bedroom.
You got to bring
in
the oven.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, unless they had an oven in the kitchen.
My problem is like the caviar, the champagne, these are bedroom things. If there was chocolate dip strawberries or the things that connote like sex or whatever. But this is to me like, darling, some champagne, perhaps some caviar. If you want, I have a Wolfgang Puck peppers and sausage pizza that can go.
By the way, can we just talk about the perv next door? The perv next door.
I felt badly for that guy. He wasn't pervy enough that it was comfortable for me. Like, I would have rather like a full perv next door.
No, he
but
was
instead,
like
instead it was just
suburban...
like a kindly gentleman who was also clearly a perv. And I was like, oh, this is actually too real.
But by the way, we all are that person, I would imagine. Like, if you lived on the coast and there was like a lot of weird activity going on at night, you'd probably take out, like, you know, you'd probably take out some binoculars and be like, oh, what's going on? But I guess he went one extra step because he could identify the faces of everyone.
He was pretty dialed into what was going on. That guy, he's like, since I retired, this is pretty much all I do. But remember, this is an era when we didn't have Netflix or streaming services.
That's a really
so like
good
one
point.
Of the one of the
we
only
had our
things
neighbors.
To watch, you one of the only things to watch at night was your neighbors. Like I watched in my old New York apartment, the apartment building across the street was a bevy of personal dramas.
Oh wow, that's so fun. I've never had that.
Oh my God. I have a real question for you guys. Okay. So why was Linda Fiorentino's character, who is a doctor, who is engaged in philanthropic elements, is on the board at the museum, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Why is she involved in this sexual, I'm not asking why does she have sex with all of these men.
I have an actual real answer.
Why is she being used by the dead man almost as if she works for him?
Well, I have an answer.
She seems to be a sex worker the same way that Angie Everhart seems to be, but they don't seem to be in equal statuses at all. And I didn't understand that.
So here's the issue. Hester House writes this script. And they offer it to Linda Fiorentino, who's coming off Last Seduction. And she's like, I don't want to play a sex worker in this film. And Friedkin goes, don't worry, I'll rewrite it for you. And changes a couple of pieces. Now, apparently, according to Michael Biehn, he said that the script made no sense at any point. Like, he's like, at the table read, he was like, I'm the villain? You know, so I guess Friedkin just kind of came in and changed it all. But it, when I realized that, I was like, oh, it makes so much more sense. It's written that she is also a sex worker.
Yeah, because that made sense. That would make sense. Because what I couldn't figure, if it was just she led this secret double life, fine. But why is she doing the bidding
to
of
me, it's like Chaz Palminteri is a guy who gets too attached to her. And then he starts to... Or, you know, or some version of that. Like, there is some, it just, and that's why her profession is bizarre and it's shoehorned
in. Because the dead
in.
Man, right? The dead man, the reason he's filming all this stuff is so that he has blackmail material on all the most powerful men.
Right.
And she is the most sought after of the women that the powerful men want to have sex with. So she features prominently in all this.
But
Jason's question isn't answered, though, because even in that
appetite.
Like, why?
She has no idea this is if we are to believe her, which I actually do. Yeah. She doesn't know she's being filmed. I think she just thinks she enjoys the sex.
Well, that's I think what this movie does unsuccessfully is just say like, oh, so she cheated on her husband once, and she's like, ooh, I've had such a boring sex life with my husband that now I would like to find more exciting things. So I guess she says to the art dealer, like, hey, do you have any friends that maybe I could
also?
I don't think that's the case.
That guy, the old guy, she did.
That's what I'm saying.
Where I get confused with Jade, because I'm like, I understand why she's not satisfied with Chaz, and I get that.
Oh, by the way, that sex is so upsetting.
That was upsetting. He is hard without any foreplay. And she cries during.
And he also is making sounds of a cry. Like, he's like...
He's like making MacGruber level sex sounds.
But...
Like...
I mean, here is Angie Everhart talking about why she is special.
I'd go to the Pacifica house and a guy would come in and we'd spend the night. They wouldn't know who I was, and I didn't know them. You know, a couple of those creeps, they didn't even want me. They wanted this other girl that they'd fucked before. They called her Jade. One of those guys was the governor. Jade must have rocked his world, because he wanted me to bend over and turn around. But I don't take it that way. He told me that Jade, she took it anyway. She couldn't get enough of it. She loved it. I saw her once leaving Kyle's house. She had long, beautiful hair and great legs. I think it was her. I never met her. I'd like to, though. I'm into women mostly.
But again, Jason, to your point, it doesn't really...
Right, like, why would she fuck that old guy then? If that's what she wants
But why wasn't she bringing this into her married life?
Well, I think that was a lost cause, babe.
She also used to date Caruso.
Right.
And they have a pseudo sex scene that is aborted because he kind of rejects her because he says you killed this guy.
But Chaz tells Caruso, and this is such, so many weird things here, because Caruso loves Linda Fiorentino. And Chaz Palminteri knows that. And he's like, well, maybe I'll get a divorce. And like, they have this like weird jockeying for like, you want to fuck my wife? And she's like, and he's like, yeah, and they know it. And it's weird. But she told him, or so Linda Fiorentino told Chaz Palminteri, she left Caruso because he's a bad lover. Then went to Chaz Palminteri.
Wait, what?
Right?
When did that happen?
That's in the locker room of the racquetball scene. He goes, you know why she left you? She said, you're a bad lover. And he goes, why would she tell you that? And he's like, she tells
me everything. I'm sorry. Hang on. Paul?
Yeah.
That is a statement of the villain. I think okay. I don't think you should trust.
I think you should assume
everything Chaz Palminteri is saying is meant to further his villainous. He's trying to make David Caruso think Linda Fiorentino did it.
But okay, so like he's seeding it early on. Okay. But now Chaz Palminteri seems to have an active sex life with these other women. Like the other woman seems incredibly drawn to him. So I don't understand.
Also, I believe that the blonde who blows him on the terrace.
Yeah.
I believe works in Caruso's office.
No, she works for Chaz. She's his secretary.
Oh, really? It's not the same woman who comes up to him in the police station, in the district attorney's office and says, Angie Everhart will meet you at this restaurant at blank and blank o'clock.
No, because when David Caruso goes to see Chaz, she lets him in.
Oh, okay. I didn't clock that. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
I thought she was part of the
other thing. No, that would be a really small world.
This relationship
is one of the reasons I kept thinking, like, it's like it's as if there's only 12 people in this entire structure of, you know, the courts, the police, the governor, everybody has access to everybody.
The fact that he's an assistant DA traveling with cops and then interrogating her in all these weird basements. I mean, they have more offices in this movie. The cops go to a different office every scene. They're in the basement. They're in a shooting gallery. They're in like a file office. Like they are setting up shops at every.
Do you remember when Angie Everhart's character is in the witness interrogation room and there is a window in the room, not a two-way mirror, a window. On the other side of the window is the firing range for the police department. So like those two rooms are just next to each other. You can watch people practice shooting before they go in and do an interrogation. I was confounded too.
Did they rough her up before she came in? Because,
well, again, no, she fell down those stairs. Remember, Caruso tackles her down the stairs.
I know she fell down the stairs, but she seems, the way she plays that and is touching her bruises and everything, it seems like something else happened in between the time that we saw her last. But here's my question about her. Why does Chaz kill her? Why?
Because she could identify.
Or did he? Or was that the governor?
Oh. Well, I think the governor sent his people out to get.
Wait a second.
Yeah.
Like, I think the people that killed Angie are Michael Biehn.
Yes.
And
that's his minions.
The guy.
Because they're breaking into the house at the end for the governor. And they just happened to, again, this group of seven people that travel around each other. they're doing their own thing that's because basically Chaz Palminteri is only killing people that are involved with Jade. Like he doesn't care. Like,
how many people has he killed? Chaz.
Two.
Three. Oh, two.
Two. He's
Maria.
Killed and the perv. No, he killed the old man and the perv.
No. Yes, exactly.
The old man, the art dealer who is by the way like a Halloween Horror Nights. Halloween Horror Nights is like crucified on the wall. Like I was like, this is the weird. Like, and they go, oh, it's a crime of passion. It's not a crime of passion. That is an intentional. Like you crucified a man on the wall.
That visual was wild.
I was like, very upsetting.
This is, you know, would take a tremendous amount of time and effort. That was like a seven, but, like the movie Seven level death scene.
By the way,
you'd need a Wolfgang Puck pizza right after.
Oh, you need to crush a puck, as I like to say.
And you maybe need to just pop up in one of those canisters and take a whiff of some of that pubic hair just to get you back in. I will tell you this. I will say this. This movie feels like it is written by like a horny like it's written by like a horny kid who only like understands missionary positions, and then is like, what if you could do all this? And I feel like everybody who goes, like every parent who went home,
well, that's how
like,
I feel about all of,
yeah,
that's how I felt about all of Bridgerton. I feel like I all of Bridgerton it. Was written by 11 year olds who'd only heard a little bit about sex, but were like, I think it's like this, and then they write it, because all of the characters in Bridgerton are so ill-informed about sex for such horny people. It is nuts. Listen, have I watched every episode? Yes, I have.
I was surprised,
like after seeing those two gingers in a scene together, like I was surprised looking back at that pube scene that there weren't any ginger pubes.
There must have been.
There weren't any that we saw.
Maybe we didn't sleep see with any. Angie Everhart.
I guess maybe he didn't sleep. Although when we see Angie Everhart on the autopsy table, she doesn't have any pubes. So Bald perhaps people. That's why. I mean, maybe you know what? Boy. Maybe we need to go back to the establishing shot of the side table.
What's interesting about that? Because I noticed that too. And the governor actually refers to her hairy pussy. Remember that.
June, clean it up, June.
That's what he said. I'm clean it, June.
All right, so just for that, we're going to play that clip of the people here right now.
If you drag me into this business, David, if my name even shows up on the periphery of this, David, you better get the fuck out of the state of California, because you'll have as much of a future here as Jerry Brown.
Who's Jerry Brown?
Wouldn't it just be an awful goddamn shame if one hairy little pussy and a thimbleful of sperm were to affect the future of this great state of ours?
Was Medford blackmailing you?
I don't get blackmailed, Mr. Corelli. I do the fucking. I never get fucked.
No. It was so upsetting that I remembered it. And then, and so then when we see her naked on the examining table, I was like, oh, where are her pubes? And then I thought, well, maybe the autopsy procedure shaves them off.
No.
I don't know.
Maybe she didn't
know. Like, I know, like with vaginal birth deliveries, that you might be onto something. They used to shave women's.
Do you think they do that to give to the family?
Like instead of ashes, like instead of being cremated, you
here,
get a box.
Here are her ashes and here are her pubes.
Well, here's the thing.
You have to pay for the urn and you have to pay for the silver box.
I did hear that Angie Everhart did go method with this, but did not want to do a nude scene. So that is a body double. So if it was Angie Everhart, it would have been correct. The body double did not do the work that she did, like the Robert De Niro of gaining a lot of weight. I will say that I do love the governor.
Are you saying Angie Everhart gained a lot of weight for this role?
I'm saying that she looks great, getting into character.
Yes.
I will say this. The governor does say some things where I'm I love Richard Crenna in this movie. Like the one day that he shot on this movie to get the end Richard Crenna. But when he's interviewing David Caruso, the blocking in this movie is so terrible. It's like so specific and weird and stilted, like a Broadway show. And like as if you don't have a camera. And when he gives this monologue to David Caruso, I don't fuck. I get fucked. I was like,
he's saying I don't get fucked.
Oh yeah, he goes, I do the fucking. All right, so yeah, so whatever that clip is, I do the fucking, I don't get.
There is so much setup.
Yeah. Well, but it is like, it is a weird thing, because I felt like, is he flirting with David Caruso now too?
Like, it did seem, I felt that too. There was a certain energy of like, I thought in that moment, I hear what you're saying, Paul, like he was saying he was going to fuck him. And I was like, okay.
Even just to humiliate him, he would do that. Like, you know, like,
I see.
Like, yeah.
Just to humble him.
Just to show him he could.
Like, I have the power to do
well,
that.
Well, this is another one of those movies from the 80s and 90s in which people in power have a level of power that is so great, they can just assassin, they can just make people disappear constantly.
Well, listen, I just watched the Jeffrey Epstein documentary on Netflix. I agree that this was sort of a trope of the time where like the governor or senators could get, you know, there were no systems of checks and balances. But when you think of Jeffrey Epstein and what happened there and why he's not serving time in a small box for the rest of his life for his crimes, like I do wonder about these men in power and what they're capable of.
100%. I agree with you 100% in that regard, but they're killing each other. You know what right. I mean? Like right. they're like what I'm like, I agree. They can like make their power allows for them to exert power over powerless people.
No, but I'm talking about how Jeffrey Epstein was able to commit suicide in that prison.
People will turn the other way.
People will turn the other way.
I'm sorry. I see what you're saying.
Or it was a hit job.
I don't believe he did. Right. So,
you believe he was murdered.
Yeah. I do too.
Some version
of. Do you not believe that, Jen?
No, I do believe that, actually. I think that's very possible.
Well, here's, again, not to pull this away from Jeffrey Epstein, but I will say I am confused.
We're just segueing this podcast into a Jeffrey Epstein.
I'm so happy to do that.
Believe me, I know you've been getting into it. I was telling Jason the other night, it's very hard to pull you away from your murders, your murder mysteries, your real life murder mysteries and sexual abductions. Here's what I will say. I don't understand the overall plot. I understand that there is a wealthy businessman blackmailing other people just to have it at his disposal, right? And he had a cabal of women. And he paid Angie Everhart $10,000 for two sessions or whatever, or for how many sessions that she did. Possibly there were more. Jade is working just because she's in a bad marriage, but it doesn't make sense because it seems like Jade is very sexual and her husband is very sexual because he's having affairs. And it just feels like,
Just because they both have sexual impulses, Paul, doesn't mean they're compatible.
Okay, that's a good. All right, well, that's okay. All right, so there you go.
But I agree with you, Paul, in that I don't think she's participating in all of this sex to gain blackmail material.
No, I agree with that.
I think she is pursuing pleasure.
Yes, but she also.
That is what I believe she. I believe her when she says that is her intention.
And, but she's also.
That she didn't know that.
She's so flirty with her husband at the gala. She's like, oh, stay. Come on, stay. And he's like, I can't stay.
Right, but she can't be Jade with him.
Okay, so that's really what it
that's
is.
Yeah,
okay,
that last line when he's like, why don't you show me a little Jade?
I want to play that clip now, too. The ending where Chaz Palminteri like oddly reveals the whole end and gets away with it here.
Where did you get these?
Kyle Medford showed them to me the day before I killed him.
You knew when you killed him.
He was a scumbag. He would have taken us both down. I would never let anyone hurt you. But I don't remember any of it. You know what I think it is? Hysterical blindness. Do me a favor, Trina. Next time we make love, you introduce me to Jade.
And then the movie ends. The movie
That's
ends.
Yeah. Crazy.
That's it. Credits.
It is really. So, I mean, to answer your earlier question, Paul, I believe this movie has two concurrent villains, right? Mm-hmm. There is the Chaz Palminteri villain who is trying to exact a certain revenge on his wife by killing all of the men who have fallen in love with her sexually.
Okay.
Right?
So he's jealous of them. All right, this is helping me.
I believe so.
Okay.
Now, that happens to intersect with the initial murder happens to be this man who is using, as you said, Angie Everhart, Linda Fiorentino, and perhaps other women to use them to have sex with men in this place where there are cameras so he can get blackmail material. So he is a
What does he want with that blackmail material? What is he doing with that money?
I don't think we ever know.
Yeah, okay. Maybe he could buy more.
I don't think we ever know because he's dead from the jump. But the villain is the governor.
Yeah.
The governor, who once he sees those pictures, he realizes, I need everybody who might have seen any of this to go away. Which is why they keep trying to kill Caruso.
Then why isn't the man in the tape with Jade from the beach house somebody that anyone knows? Because if the whole idea is that he's blackmailing famous men, wouldn't you go, oh my gosh, and that's the head of blank blank. They're just more focused on her.
That's what
so
I was
So you think it's
about.
Maybe a Bubba the Love Sponge Hulk Hogan scenario where...
Yeah, I thought there were other guys she was bringing there to fuck that were maybe not a part of...
But it's that guy's house.
I know, but it seems she knows she can go there.
Okay, so maybe what you're saying is that guy goes, hey, you have all this stuff in you. Here's the keys to my house. Use it at your leisure. And he's just maybe getting not even blackmail footage because that's not in the safe. although he did throw the tape in the fireplace, which makes me think that he does tape all the sex there, but then is like, you know what? I don't care about this because that's just her getting her jollies off.
Wait, no, no. Who threw the tape in the fireplace?
The man who was killed like the Halloween Horror Nights in the beginning.
See, I don't know that that's the case.
Okay.
It could be Chaz Palminteri who threw the tape in the fireplace.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But why would he be there?
Because he killed him.
No, but he didn't kill him at the beach house. He killed him at the other house.
Oh, so that tape was in the...
They found the governor... The governor pictures in his safe. They found that tape in the ashes of the fireplace. So the fire
assumption
would be
that Chaz Palminteri is trying to erase anything that connects Linda Fiorentino to this stuff.
See, I wonder if in the original script, Linda Fiorentino used to be a sex worker for this guy, and he's trying to erase that past for her to kind of clear her out. I want to be married to a reputable woman, and he maybe has more of an abusive relationship with her and a powerful relationship with her because of that, because he's bringing her into society.
Like, yep.
He may have met her that way, but I mean, there's something missing, I guess, is what I'm saying.
There's something missing. We might just not be able to solve it because it might not be there. It might, because like I said, I kept writing like, wait, what has happened that this is now? Like, I felt like scenes were missing, connections weren't being made. Like, this had many of the, like I said, very broad strokes of the police are this, the lawyer now has this, and blah, blah, but none of it was based on like, gathering evidence, finding clues, like the guy. Oh my God! We do have the scene where the guy, the tech, runs the tape, and he's like, "Great, zoom, enhance."
Yeah,
you know, like we do have one of those, which made me laugh. Freeze it, magnify.
They also say the film is low density. Now I know a little bit about filmmaking. I've never heard about low density film.
Yeah,
I will say that
it was.
It was wild. It doesn't make sense. And it ends so abruptly that you're like, what did I just watch? Like, it ends in a weird way. It's like, okay, so I guess Chaz got away with it. And now she's going to be stuck in this relationship where she's got to pretend to be Jade or kill him. I mean, sequel is ready to go.
Yeah. What I couldn't figure out was like, it really is. It makes a fool of David Caruso.
Yeah. Well, he'll never be a DA.
Right? Because he doesn't solve the case.
No. Well, he does, because I think that those minions go down for the whole thing.
That's what I mean, though. So Chaz Palminteri gets away with murder. Oh, I see what you're
saying. Like, he doesn't. Yeah, he thinks this is crazy.
Like, to think about it, really, the movie ends and the villain has won.
Yes.
How often does that happen?
Yeah, and you would buy it more if it was the femme fatale, because I think that that's more expected.
Yes.
But here it's like Chaz Palminteri. It's like, huh?
No, that the absolute gross villain has won.
Wins the
His
day.
His wife is now trapped with him, and David Caruso. I don't even know. We don't even land. We don't even end with David Caruso.
No, it's bizarre.
Very strange.
But that's. I think that's part of not wanting to end on a ginger.
And you know what? That might have been a good choice.
And you know what?
Honestly, you guys, I don't think you can end a movie on a ginger.
There you go. That's the shirt. Obviously, we had opinions about this movie. The people out there with a different opinion, it is now time for second opinions.
The movie was a piece of shit, yet this person recommends it. Tell me, what is the message? Maybe that art is subjective. I need a second opinion.
That was John LeJoie. June, you want to say something about your comments about gingers in this show?
First of all, I'm not the only one. A lot of times I feel like I have to bear the brunt of a few things here. I'm not the only one to make comments about gingers, but
I did too.
Thank you,
too.
Jason. I just want to say that I think that there are so many stunning gingers out there. Like, actually,
absolutely.
Take my breath away gingers.
Yes.
It was just a surprise, and it was a surprise to see a male ginger. It was all surprising.
I have nothing to say bad about gingers as far as how they look and how beautiful they are. I only had to say it about their box office viability. That's really what I think I'm trying to get
is
to the
that,
bottom.
Is that what you call ginger vaginas? box office viability.
Well, that's when they use that pillow to help get their...
I just heard it.
Yeah,
hello.
Yeah,
hello.
You just said... Oh, that was interesting. That's the first time I heard it. Okay, got it.
These are 5-star reviews culled from Amazon. 72% of them are 5-star reviews. And this is not one of those situations like... in episodes past where this is bundled into like a bunch of movies. This is one movie, and their reviews are great. I'm going to just read you a few because they're all super fun. This is from Yurnal. Yurnal wrote this in 2015. Great movie, especially if you like San Francisco. A wonderful movie. It has so many San Francisco street scenes for the lover of that city. Good plot. Has enough car chases to satisfy the most hardcore car chase junkie. And pretty sexy too. 5 stars. This movie says had enough car chases. Feels like there's like, I guess maybe 2, but this guy really enjoys the San Francisco. San Francisco doesn't really read to me in this film. But anyway, that's that.
There's a whole sequence where his brakes fail. And
yeah, that, that's,
I mean,
two.
That could have only worked two. In, you know, San Francisco.
Well, yeah, the old way to kill people in San Francisco. I wanted somebody to go down that little mini street, that really hard street. That's like very, with a all right, Soundman J in 2014 writes this. This is a smoking hot thriller. David Caruso is his usual good actor self, with Linda Fiorentino being outstanding in her sexy, complex self as a psychiatrist. Very good thriller with twists and turns throughout. Lori Dobbs chimes in 2016 and writes, this movie is okay, but it's not the one I was looking for. 5 stars. Lilas.
What were you looking for?
I have no idea. Maybe Slipper.
I wonder.
And then this one from Lilas in 2020, March 2020, still getting the reviews in March 2020. I don't know what it is about this movie. It's sexy and naughty. I just love it. 5 stars. And wow. Then I believe this is the final one I'll read here from Gwendolyn. This is written in 2013. This is a good movie. It keeps you on your toes and in suspense, but the wild sex, man, these were some buck wild people, and I'm not mad at them. 5 stars.
This was wild. And just to answer to the person who said it had some good car chases in it, it does not. If you want to see incredible San Francisco car chase, rent the Peter Yates movie Bullet with Steve McQueen.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Unbelievable San Francisco set car chase.
All right, this movie comes out in 1995. The budget is $50 million.
Whoa!
$50 million.
Wait, so Paul, will you remind... So this is 1995. When was Basic Instinct?
Well, this is after... This is kind of ripping Basic Instinct. So
that's like, what I'm wondering. Yes. Was it like right before? Was Basic Instinct like the 2 years earlier?
I have a feeling that Robert Evans
saw
that. Is
this the next one?
Yeah, so Basic Instinct comes out in 92. So about 3 years later. Okay. But I think it's in that zone, you know, of
film. For sure.
So the budget is $50 million. The total gross, $9.8 million.
Wow.
The top three movies in 1995 are Batman Forever, Apollo 13, and Toy Story. This movie came in at 122nd out of all the movies made in 1995, beaten by films that we've done on this show: Congo, Disclosure, of course, Virtuosity, Johnny Mnemonic, Street Fighter, and Fair Game. It beat Hackers, Junior, and Top Dog. So Junior, our namesake image from the original poster, it beat that. And here is one. Well, I'll say.
Can I just say something wild?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Very briefly. Although these, for some reason, these aren't in order. Joe Esterhaus writes in 1992, Basic Instinct. 1993, Sliver. 1995, both Showgirls and Jade.
Wow.
And then still 80 he's still got crazy stuff in the Jagged Edge. He's still got other stuff that, you know, and have seen, but just those movies alone in that era, like back to back to back to back, like successful erotic thrillers, then Jade.
So crazy. I mean, this is really, I mean, a bizarre time. I also am just kind of confused about why they're meeting at church. The religion also doesn't really play a part in it. There's so many weird things about this movie. But I guess the question is, like, I feel like it touches on so many things. It's like a stew of like all these movies mixed together by the ultimate cook of these movies. But would you recommend watching it? Would you recommend watching it,
Jason? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a fun one. This is a fun one.
I would recommend watching all the movies I just mentioned.
Look, yeah. I think I want to do Sliver on this show. I feel like we got to do Sliver
we
on this show.
We should do Sliver on this show. I think at some point, maybe the very last How Did This Get Made will be Showgirls.
Something.
That'll be the way that we end it. But they're, you know, like, these are all, like, exactly to your point earlier, June, like, that era of erotic thrillers from the 90s that was, you know, 9 1/2 weeks and Angel Heart.
Two Moon Junction, baby.
Two Moon Junction, Sherilyn Fenn. Like, those were, it's a type of movie that I'm trying to think just does not get made anymore.
I know.
There is no longer, like, you know, even like the, you know, Body Heat, Jagged Edge, you know, like when Kathleen Turner is like a sex symbol and all of these people are like dangerous and there's so much going on. I don't know. I loved it.
I loved it too.
We're going to wrap up. I'm just going to leave you all with this one thought. And this is quickly it. O.J. Simpson was judged as being not guilty. And when he went to the press that day, he said, "I'm excited to go see Jade."
What?
So there you go, people. What? That was one of the notable things.
Like, is that like people saying, "I'm going to Disneyland" when they win the Super Bowl?
It was like he stated to the press he was excited to go see Jade. So that's how we end today's episode. It comes full circle. Also, a very big thank you to Avril Halley, who pulled this movie out of the dark depths. She made an amazing mashup clip of NCIS and Jade, which we will post up on all of our socials. A reminder to join us on the How Did This Get Made Discord board. A big thank you to Nate Kiley for finding that OJ Simpson fact out. Nate, you are a chef's kiss to you. A big thank you to Devin, our engineer, who pieces all this stuff together painstakingly, and our super producer, Cody, who keeps this ship running, and Molly. People, I want to give a big shout out to the Ghost of Craig T. Nelson. That is Zach McAleese on Instagram, who designs our amazing How Did This Get Made posters. Also, I want to give a tip of the hat to Nate Kiley, who also designs some of our great stuff for our Facebook group. I love it all. You are all fantastic. Make sure you give us a call at 619-PAUL-ASK. That's 619-PAUL-ASK for the mini episode. I will talk about Jade, but I'll also talk about your life because I am helping people solve their problem. Make sure you follow me. And like I said, How Did This Get Made on our Discord pages. We are there all the time. And I can't wait to talk to you all next week about a film called Jade. And you know what? Before I get out of the whole thing, one person I didn't thank in that whole mix of people, because I'm saving it for the end, because I know that he's going to listen to the end, July Diaz, the master, pulling this all together, listening, knowing what people want and what they don't want. Thank you, July. See y'all later next week on the mini episode. Bye for now.